again, for you, everything you can know about forgiveness, you've learned from your father. And that doesn't mean a lot. And what it means is, and not just you, but everybody, you haven't really learned anything about forgiveness. What you've learned is what it took to reach a truce. Mm-hmm. And without a father figure in your in one's life, there's always some father figure, but you know what I mean.
The obvious one.
But without that, even if in places where there is none, then it's even worse for the female, because then her capacity for forgiveness is only based on total manipulation. I mean, there's never a situation where it's possible for her to have an honest feeling. It's only what it takes to manipulate. I mean, in other words, if there's a father figure, there's a balance point. Mm-hmm. And that's the place that you try to reach. Without the father figure, that point is everywhere and nowhere. So it's whatever it takes to manipulate that moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been a little survivor for a while.
But it is no survivor.
And
the reason is so it's and I'm not talking just to you now. I'm talking to everybody, that what we end up with is a condition where we'll start out these questions when we go back and learn about childhood stuff and mothers and fathers, and you'll start out feeling like a victim, like, oh, I'm, you know, these there this happened to me and this happened to me and this happened to me and I'm so and it's so, but what in fact it is. Is that you have to get one step below that to find out you were the child of Satan that was just moved this way or that way. I mean, there can't be any place where you can see yourself as manipulated into being what you are by anything other than either yourself or Satan himself. You can't be a victim of your parents when this is over, if you see what I mean. If you see yourself as a victim of your parents, then what we're about to do has lost its meaning. Because then you'll just be one other person will end up in a psychiatrist's couch. What?
The last time we were here, we were talking about, you know, memories and stuff, and I had, and I remembered something. And just now when you were talking, I remembered it again, and yeah, I've always painted the picture of being the victim of my parents, and I was starting to think my parents were the victim of me. It's like I'm starting to remember some of the incredibly evil things that I did, especially to my mother. I mean, the first ones I'm remembering, I can see what I did to my mother. But I'm also starting to think I must have been pretty evil to my father, too. When I grew up.
Well, I want you to remember this. There's a psychological term that's going to be heard. You're going to hear it 1,000 times from now on. It's called the law of creative consistency. And write it down. If you don't have a book, get one. The law of creative consistency. Now, what that means is it's that you will always filter your memory by the present view of yourself. So that, in other words, if I just say, when we first start this process, tell me something you remember, you will remember an incident filtered through how you view yourself today. For instance, you know, everybody views me, I probably foisted on it, as this lone wolf, and I had a pet wolf, and all that crap. But there were 100 memories in my past that were I was a sniveling little coward. But I don't like to think about it, and so unless I'm forced to, I won't ever bring those up. You know, Harry's memory of himself is always this patient endurance, that he's courageously enduring against the winds of hell, and the fact is he didn't endure shit. you know, each one of us has a view of ourself that is a plus. You can't have a negative view of yourself in this environment. Even if somebody else thinks it's negative, you believe it's a positive. You have a view of yourself that you filter everything through, and especially you filter your capacity to forgive through it. Okay? It's the law of creative consistency. Now, the goal of what we're going to do is to get before that law came into action, motion. And so, therefore, in order for us to do that, we have to have an open forum like this where you're not going to get by with your law of creative consistency, and in addition to it, you're going to be forced to remember things that you haven't thought of yet. So there'll be new things into the pot. So all the stuff that you've told me in the past, and for most of you, I know, you know, I've got notes of everything you've told me about what you remember, we're going to go beyond that. Because for the most part, the earliest things that you think you remember probably weren't your own memories. They were someone else's memories, your family memories, family discussions, filtered through your law of creative consistency.
I was thinking of early memories. After you said that, I became really suspicious of the things I remembered. And there were a lot of them. I kept searching for a memory that didn't have a picture to collaborate it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, most of them, I knew there was a picture that existed of that moment.
A photograph.
Yeah.
Oh, a photograph. Mm-hmm.
No, a photograph. You know, of yeah. different things that I remember that, you know, are whole big long veils. And,
well, let me.
Doesn't mean they're not true, but they make me real suspicious.
Right, they make you suspicious, and we have to, by definition, in order to do what we're going to do, we have to. As moment that there is the slightest suspicion about that memory, we have to discard it, and go back further.
That memory,
because it's invalid. One way that I'll give you six or seven different ways that we'll go through this. This is going to be fun, but it's going to be difficult. I'll give you a number of different ways that you can test those memories to see whether or not they are really your memories. One of them is, if it's a snapshot, forget it. If it's a moving series of events, it's probably, it at least passes that test. If it's just an instant, forget it. It's not your memory.
What about memories like you see from above?
Well, a lot of things that you think are memories that you see from above are really dreams that you've dreamt, that your mind can't differentiate whether it was a dream or reality.
But
if you look at yourself,
like,
you're viewing.
You remember seeing yourself there and your father here. And, you know what I mean?
So what I'm going to do to you, I'm going to rip up your memories. That's why I meant hot seat. It's not like a hot seat. But your memories, by all of us, are going to. We're going to rip up each other's memories until we find a few that we can deal with. Okay?
Your memories are your possessions.
Yeah.
Especially if they're your identities.
But remember, you've got all kinds of sources for what you think is memory. Some of them are your dreams. You've had a dream, and then your mind thinks that it happened to you.
Yeah.
Others, in early years, they're just family stories, and you created an image that goes with those family stories. You know, all kinds of different ways. We'll get into that. Okay? Anybody else have anything to talk about before we get into this? Well, let me ask you, does everybody understand why we're doing it and its relationship to forgiveness versus truces?
To understand what we have called forgiveness really is.
Right.
Right.
And where it came from, so that you can see it with a new mind. Okay? There's a principle of spiritual matters that can never be forgotten. And it'll save you all kinds of hurt and deception. And that is that the God of this world, the prince of the power of the air, came for nothing but to steal, to maim, to kill, and to destroy. Many, many times it'll look like something will benefit you by you taking action to yourself, by you being concerned with yourself. But every time you are, he came not but for to steal, to kill, to maim, and to destroy. Now, we're all of the stuff about... Let me concentrate on one thing for a minute. You realize, each of you, that there's a child within you.
Yes.
And it's a child who, in particular areas, has never advanced emotionally or physically or mentally beyond a very young age. It's a hurting child, a humiliated child, a hating child, and a word that really is, to me, an emotive word is, it's a horrified child. And we've got to get to that child. That child isn't the victim. That child is the evil one. Now that's the biggest thing that you've got to see tonight.
Yeah, it's like that image of the ultimate manipulator. It's not even...
You understand me?
Yeah.
That being within you, that you, I mean, we look at the words. We use hurting, humiliated, horrified, hating. It's this little kid that we have to feel sorry for. No, we've got to slay the mother. Because he is here not but for to kill, to maim, to hurt, and destroy, and to cause you to fail in everything. Especially at the final. Am I confusing you?
Well, yeah, a little bit, but I mean... Mm-hmm. I think I understand.
Okay. Okay, the memories that are within you, of that child's memories, are gripping and grinding, and they have almost a hypnotic power over us. I mean, it's the kind of power that causes you to do something that you think is almost involuntary, that you have an involuntary response, that you, it's almost as natural to you as breathing. Now, there are memories of the deep emotional pain, resentments, hate, fear, embarrassment, shame. There are all those things that are just sitting in you like festering sore. Now, these are all spiritual faults, and you have to see them as faults or we can't go any farther.
The fear and the...
All of those. You understand them? They're not something that you're going to deal with to make better. That's what psychology tries to do. They're something that we confess as sin and slay. You understand that if God got tired tonight and he said, okay, I've messed around long enough, the world is, it's over tonight. That every portion of your life that wasn't in a state of pure joy would be considered the sin that crucified Christ? Understand that? It doesn't matter whether you were a hated child, a hurt child, an orphan child, a victimized child, any place within you that any stimulus could confront that wasn't, the response of it wasn't pure joy, God would say you're guilty of crucifying Christ and you're dead. You're dead meat. 2 Corinthians 10.
What bothers me is I understand what you said. I'm not the least bit confused by it. That bothers me.
Okay, well, let's listen.
Not a damn thing I can do.
Yeah, yeah.
The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations in every high place that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Now guess what, folks? That doesn't just mean the thoughts I have now. It means the thoughts I had since I was 3 years old or 1 year old. Every thought that I've ever had has to be brought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Do you know that? This is the first time we've ever talked about this. But it's also the first time we ever talked about that the mother figure in your memory has to be replaced by this, and the father figure has to be replaced by the father.
If that isn't true, we're preaching time dependence.
Is that kind of how it fits in, that, you know, all these, the hurt and the fear and the rage and stuff are all based on initially a live separation? And that if you know that the body, your mother was there and that the father was there, that live separation doesn't stand.
It can't stand alone. It can't stand.
Where it throws me is the part about where for you to reach this time, I mean, all those things had to happen.
That's right.
So
now they have to be seen as necessary. In a visual, you have to see that you've been climbing a mountain. And this is the only, this is where you can see it as many, any one of a number of sort of heroic quests. It can be the quest for the Holy Grail. It can be the quest for the top of the pyramid. It can be any quest you want to visualize out of that it's in myth. But every step of your life has been that quest thus far to get to the top of the mountain. Now, the point is, it's the same experience. Have you ever really climbed a high mountain? Has anybody really been to a really high one that took you hours and days to get to the top? Mm-hmm. You're exhausted and you got scratches all over you, and there's 15 times you almost fell on your butt and you can't breathe because of the air. But once you get to the top of the mountain, it's pure joy, and every step of the way that you've been was considered pure joy also. By reaching the top of the mountain, you brought every thought of that trip into captivity to the obedience of that mountain.
Great analogy.
You understand?
I got that now. Because before it just sounded like, well, fuck, then everybody's condemned.
So now, what you have to see is that every thought of your experience was part of this grail quest, if you want to go on that basis.
Okay.
Yeah.
You understand me?
Yeah.
Now, with that in mind, you cannot be a victim any time in your past. You can't be a hurting child that's still there because you've reached the pinnacle. When that which is perfect is come, that which is in part is done away. All of those thoughts have been in part because they didn't see the finishedness. Now you can see the finishedness, and so you can complete all those thoughts. That's what this means. But do you understand? Can everybody say amen to that?
Yeah. Amen.
Can everybody else say amen? Now,
including John.
Do you understand? Once you've said amen, you've just condemned yourself.
What?
I take it back.
You've condemned yourself to ever be in a state of mind other than joy. You can't ever again have an excuse. Well, you don't know what he did to me. Or it's the wrong time of the month.
You can't blame a guy for that.
What?
Never joined. A little cute into
long hair each
other. All the steps were
not. Oh, nothing is hairy. Here, only here.
Perfect. Can use a bitch.
Kim, we're going to reuse something that we used before, but I'm just going to go through it real quickly and see if it keys. What I want to do is cause you to key early memories, early epinephrine memories. And if it keys it, write it down. If it doesn't, don't worry about it, okay? Now, do you understand it? You understand why we're doing this? It's to bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. All thoughts that have come up to this point have to be in captivity to the obedience of Christ.
Write the memory down, right?
Yeah. Yeah, or if you want to.
This is just like any memory.
Any memory. These are just going to be memory joggers. Remember our goal that we've set here, let me put it more clearly.
Just like the hole in the wall under digging.
Yeah, this is a hole. This is, but it's a different hole than the one we've been digging before. This hole, the ones we were digging before were sideways holes. This one is down. Okay? And we want to get down further than your mind has ever let you go before, because it's necessary to get a memory, at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 memories, that wasn't subject to the law of creative consistency. Do you understand me? That wasn't biased by your present view of yourself.
Present.
Well, you understand, it's the same. It's all...
You're really the same.
It's really the same.
Yeah, so this memories before language.
No.
No.
Your view of you is always been present.
Your view of you is tied in.
How could you find any memory that was before?
Because now we will have a witness to rip your little memory apart.
Oh, okay. So can you?
Okay.
The way you make things so palatable.
Like the corners of my
just rip your little heart out. Take it out, watch it beat, and feed it to you. Feelings.
No Kodak commercial.
Nothing more than feelings. Okay. The death, divorce, or absence of one or both of your parents during your early childhood. Does that trigger anything? Complete or partial lack of support or approval or verbal encouragement from your parents, which left you with a feeling of little or no worth or value.
Oh, can you repeat that one?
Well, something that was, it's a lack of support from your parents or verbal encouragement from them, which left you with little or no feeling of worth or value. In other words, you're less than nothing because they didn't support you. They didn't give you encouragement. They didn't give you any attaboys. Overprotective parents who never let you pay for a mistake, never let you fail, never let you run out of money. That can destroy you just as bad. How about religious lectures and judgments? And we have confusion that's caused by parents who preach and teach one thing and live another. I find it incredible that Angie is here and we're going to rip apart her parents upstairs. Peers in your childhood who picked at you, nagged, harassed, and teased, all under this guise of humor. I can still see that picture of Harry. He's a fat little kid, and everybody's picking on him. Tall guys are picking on him.
Usually tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed assholes.
Nordic types.
Like fish in their pockets.
Lutefisk.
Lutefisk.
Lutefisk
jewelry.
This is a recurring dream you have.
Do you see this from above?
Continual feelings of insecurity caused by being harassed by Norwegians.
Tall.
Continual feelings of insecurity caused by being in a transient family where you always moved. Yeah, feelings of insecurity because all your relatives were short.
Everybody was tall people in the other part.
Was no one over 5 feet.
Is this real or is this?
No, this last part is.
Just a little. Your family short?
Here's another one for you. Here's another one for you, Harry. Inferior adolescent feelings because your face and body didn't meet adolescent standards.
Still doesn't.
the peel left. You
know. I remember, I told you that story, didn't I? When I got my first chest hair.
You said yank it out?
Yeah, my sister yanked it out. What do we have here, a little Victor Mature?
That's a funny line.
I know, it's a funny line, but I hated her. Oh, man. God, I just
want to die. You know, I think your whole family is like, oh, she's terrible.
Alright.
Cold-blooded, but funny.
Well, this applies especially, it's this thing gets down to the, you know, like, yeah, like, especially females with no breasts, or too much breast, real little weenies.
Everybody looks at
female or female.
All lies.
No, sorry, Harry. Like that.
He's from a short family.
Oh, no. No,
man.
No.
Oh,
no. Oh, no.
Not in the shower.
That's rough.
He's married with Christian patients, or I don't know.
Okay, continual sense of low self-esteem because of the Bible study that you're in.
Continual sense of
Okay, it looks like your memory is
going on. Good love. This is your life.
Tuesday night.
Everybody's hell.
Tuesday night.
All this is being filtered through your present.
Filtered through your positive self-image.
All right, all right.
All right.
If there was chronic illness as a child, I'm thinking things like with Pete had these incredible allergies from the time he was just a little baby, and he had to go into for shots 5 days a week.
That's really bad.
I mean it's just no trust from mother or father, continual false accusations, or at least accusations that you thought were false.
I think there's a memory forming here where I had to repeatedly go to the Methodist church to get shots from tall people with pimples. <I'm weaning.
laughs> Parents who forced you to take sides in their own arguments.
My parents would never argue in front of me. Why, that was like a strict family.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's
could
a lot.
Never argue in front of me. And so they would just, I mean, you could see it build up, and then they would go back into a bedroom, and then they would come out hating each other.
And total silence.
That's where you got your definition of sex.
Yeah.
Okay, then another one is nicknames that you hated.
Jockstrap.
What?
Jockstrap.
That was your nickname?
Mm-hmm.
What a strange nickname.
It was awful.
Mine was Red.
I didn't know what it was.
I hated it. Hated it.
You really feel stupid.
Yeah.
Stretch. How's the weather up there? Stretch.
Red.
Feeble attempts to get back at someone who has accused you.
You couldn't do it with a straight face. No, like, that
isn't true. He works on these for hours in his little room. How can I leave him tonight?
Oh, it's so easily done, Harry. I mean,
yeah. I'd be real disappointed if he had to work for an hour. No.
No communications with parents. Or liturgical communication.
Break that down. Liturgical communication.
Oh, like
which only, it's only formal, formalized, ritualized.
How are you? I'm fine. Dinner's on the table. I'm fine.
Either being ashamed of your family. Now, ashamed of your family is a big one.
Yeah, I gotta let go.
or intimidated by your family. Like in my case, I grew up in a very wealthy resort town in Arizona. And our family was poor because my dad lost all the money before he moved there. And so I was like humiliated constantly because I was like the poorest kid in town. And I mean, that really affected you when you're like 9, 8, 10. So anyway, either being ashamed of your family or being intimidated by them because of high expectations. Either one can ruin you. Next one is physical, mental, or sexual abuse as a child. That includes the devastating put-downs and criticisms of people, of tall people.
Tall, poor people.
Tall, poor people.
Long, sharp needles.
Then another one, no physical skills.
Physical, mental, sexual,
abuse. All the kinds of things. It's really a subjective thing. It's whatever you think is abusive towards you, physically or mentally or sexually. And then that includes the devastating put downs and criticisms, mocking.
Cruel scourge.
That? No physical skills in a physical skills full society. What? Bad grades. That can really wipe you out. Early or late or no physical development.
Early or late physical development. People are taking this shit seriously. No, they really are.
Early or late physical development.
Physical development. What I'm going to do for those of you, I'm going to go ahead and have this list typed, have Barbara type it.
This would be the top 10 reasons.
Why did you do that before?
Because I didn't think about it until just now.
You already have it typed somewhere.
Just use these. That's what I tried to say earlier. I didn't say write all these down. I said use them if they.
Yeah, you did. I just wanted to write them all down.
Okay.
Yeah, I was trying that for
now. Well, what I'm going to do is have Barbara type that thing that we just read and then what I'm about to read now. So we'll hand it out Thursday. Okay? So, but what I want you to do though. Is so you don't have to write this stuff down, but if it triggers something, write it down. Remember the we're trying to get back before you enter your real early memory, so you can't be fooled by this law of creative consistency. Okay. Okay. A lot of these are like early memory things that people normally remember.
Well, do any good if like I talked to you last night over here, but it's about. That one thing I can remember really far back for me, because it was like in the first grade, even though I was 7 in the first grade. And like when you said all these things, nothing really.
Okay.
Except for when I was bigger. I mean, like.
Yeah, that's fine. Whatever it is, you write it down.
So go ahead and start with that.
Right. Whatever it is, even if it's. Don't judge those right now. If there's something that comes to mind that's an early memory that comes to mind, trust the process that the Holy Spirit is bringing that to your mind for a purpose.
Okay. Mark, what's that tomorrow?
I discarded a lot of the teenage ones.
Okay, well, just write them all down.
Well, I just have to charge
them. Here.
Well, it's like sometimes something really has a big impact.
Yeah, something that has an impact on you that you'll know internally. Trust your internal process. Okay. And again, I think we're going to, well, never mind. One thing that most people remember are early birthday parties, real early ones. If you stop and sometimes that comes to mind. Can you recall any of your teachers when you were young, especially kindergarten or first or second grade? Did you get along with them? Did you have problems with them? Do one or two teachers stand out? Why? Why do they stand out?
Gary. I fell in love with it, but her husband was an FBI agent.
I was going to say, that was Mrs. Bray for me.
Yeah, but again, what I promise you with those kinds of memories, I promise you they've been filtered through creative consistency.
Dang.
Huh?
I think she said
dang.
Oh.
Dang.
Okay.
Dang.
That was scary. What kind of vacations, if any, did your family take? Vacations. Where did you go on vacation? What did you do? Those are the kinds of things that, again, are normally pleasant, or experiences that might trigger something.
Barbara's typing this part.
Yeah, this part. All this is going to be typed up by Thursday. Can you, like, one of the big things for me was I can remember distinctly the day I finally learned to tie my shoes.
So can I.
I was 18.
Oh.
No.
What? Sway, where's loafers?
No, it was a big, big deal for me. The day that I learned to hunt, and I remember I was so proud of it, I was running around telling everybody. But that's the kind of thing. The day you learned to ride a bicycle. What happened? What were the memories that took place? Now again, here, what we're going to try to do for this next few weeks and period of time is to cause our memories to get used to thinking in that back time. So that we can, by opening our memory, bring every thought into obedience to the captivity of Christ. Now, we're not going to go around and we're going to trust that by airing it out, by the ability, by the openness of confessing it one to another, that God will honor that process and will take the activity. Okay? What about Christmases? Can you remember a special Christmas? A special present? That you may have received, or a time of particular disappointment. In general, what did your family do for fun? Like in our case, my mother and dad and I played canasta all the time. Huh?
Argue.
Oh yeah.
And complain. Yeah, that was another.
What did your family do for fun? Can you remember, like picnics or outings or games that you played? Well, don't worry if there is no memory of it. That's God's plan too. You understand? This is whatever we are and whatever we're never going to be judged by what we don't have or what we can't do. Okay? How did you handle bedtime when you were little? Did you get all upset? Were you afraid of the dark? Can you think of any special incidents? Did you have to have a light on when you went to sleep? Did you scream and yell a lot? Were there monsters in the closet or under the bed? You know, those kinds of things. Now see, I mean, this is really, really, there's something really neat in this. Because, I mean, I know Angela better than she knows herself. I mean, I've been with her since she was that big. It's really going to be neat. I mean, this is neat. I like this.
Angela, do you remember being under a desk somewhere going like this to a big, tall, goofy person? Do you remember that? He talks about that all the time.
Okay.
How you used to go like that.
Do you remember being told to shut up a lot when you were real little?
Or when you put the garbage can?
Okay, let me give you some more guidelines on this. First of all, it's the earlier the memory, the better. The more early memories, the better. The memories must be yours alone. Now that's the biggie. And the memories must involve specific times or events. They can't be generalized things like, well, when I was little, I used to be afraid of the dark.
Yeah, I never got any candy.
They're specific things.
Me too. Just like a flood gift.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, you said about Christmases and birthdays. Yeah. That reminded me.
Okay, now what we're probably going to do is hypnotize somebody, or someone, or more than someone. So I promise you we're going to do it this time.
No.
And we're going to do it so that you can see the difference between what you can remember with your consciousness and what you can remember unconsciously. And we're going to investigate and see if...
That should be really interesting. I was just thinking, like on the Christmas memory I was telling you about,
I remember what I got that to me was degrading and I didn't want it, but I don't remember what I wanted. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It was like I had something in my mind that I really wanted to get, but I didn't get it, and I got this other thing, and it was just crushed.
Okay, these are some more memory joggers that let me give you. What was your usual mood as a child? Were you happy or sad? Why? Did you ever feel sorry for yourself?
Yeah.
Why?
Constantly.
Mm-hmm. What were your brothers and sisters like? Did you get along with them? Why or why not? Could you trust them? Could you imagine? Could you imagine my sister answering these?
I was trying to say, really. I can't even imagine my sister answering.
All right.
Could you trust them?
Who is the most important person in your life besides your mother and father in the earliest years?
Oh, man.
God.
That's easy. One I could never trust.
Can it be a whole bunch of people?
I don't know.
Why were they the most important?
Oh, I know the answer to that.
Yeah, wow.
Get my parents in trouble.
You worry as a little shit.
Yeah, but again... Again, don't trust your... You have to do it as best as you can. That's what I'm saying. You have to... The thing with this will teach us is that you have to trust what's there, but you don't give it any importance. You understand?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're just flashes anyway.
Who is the most important person besides any relative?
Who's the most important non-family?
Yeah. Do you remember specific things that were happening in history? I mean, in the world in your early life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me have a pen. I gotta add that one.
Yeah, I don't know the desk, so when the telephone should be saved.
Definitely.
The one I remember the clearest was the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
I remember we pissed off about Watergate because.
You see, with me, I mean, this will give you an idea of timing. But my memories were when U.S. declared war on when Pearl Harbor was bombed. That's where the memory that and 38.
You just reminded me.
You were three.
Oh, I can remember it clearly. I mean, it was a big, big deal.
I don't remember how old I was, but I remember where I was.
41, wasn't it bomb 41?
41, December 41.
And he's born in
38.
That's three.
Oh, that's four.
I was in this hotel in Corpus Christi, and our family was on vacation when Robert Kennedy got shot, and everybody was so upset. I thought, who cares? I've never heard of this guy.
Well, anyway.
That sounds like John and everybody gave us the
back. But think about what things that you remember when you were really small, about things that were happening around, you know, like in the world. How did it affect you any?
Yeah, like NASA launches and stuff like that.
Anything.
Elvis.
Okay.
Elvis.
Did you always believe, did you for the most part believe your parents when they talked to you, when they told you things, when you were real small? Did you argue with them? When and what age did you, and what event caused you to know that your parents were not perfect? And that's a big thing. Because even childhood perfection doesn't mean what we think of perfection. Childhood perfection is perceived as consistency. And so the time that you know that they're not perfect has to do when you find out they were not consistent. Did you get spanked as a child? Why?
Did you get your mouth washed out?
Do you remember specific instances? Did you get your mouth washed out with soap?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see that again.
Oh, gosh.
Did you believe that you could manipulate your parents?
What do you think kept us alive?
How did you do it? Now, what frightened you? What really frightened you as a child? Not the humorous stuff. Can you remember some of your scariest experiences? Now, I promise you, almost all the time, they will have to do with being left alone.
That's the first thing I was
thinking.
That
was what I wrote down, people leaving me. Yeah.
But it can't be remembered, but try to make them specific. That's what we're trying to do, is get back to specific times.
I can remember one specific.
What were some of your most embarrassing experiences as a child? The really bad ones.
You wish
you would never have been born, and they were.
Like, when I was 18, you wouldn't believe. Oh, what another one at 20.
Who and what were involved? As it's, yeah, Harry gets by with saying it all the way up to the time he's 18 and 20. The rest of you, it's about like 5 and 6. 3.
It always has to do with defecation.
Who
were.
In inappropriate places.
What, like here?
When he's 20?
Yes. In a bookcase at a girl's house.
In a bookcase?
Your mother's bookcase.
I don't want to hear about it, Harry. Harry, we're not listening.
I don't want to know.
I swear to God.
We don't want to know, Harry.
Harry. Smell it in the office. Why?
No, we don't want to know now.
Tyra.
Don't encourage him, Tyra.
Ask me again.
Can I tell my defecation?
Okay, the specific things, again. Remember, like,
Harry embarrasses me.
When you were a child, the first time you smoked a cigarette or took a puff of a cigarette.
I did that a lot.
But remember the first time you did it.
Yeah, I remember.
The first time you took a drink of alcohol.
Do it again.
Bring back memory.
The first time you used an illicit or illegal drug.
Well, that wouldn't
hurt.
Huh?
I was real. I was like 9.
I was 28, 30 years old.
Yeah.
Huh?
I was a teenager.
Okay. Did you, as a general, listen, please. Did you, as a child, feel lonely often? Or did you feel rejected often? When and why?
We might be here if we get to everybody's list at this time next year doing these lists.
No, what I would like us to do is I'd like us to see if we could go, if Bananas could go to the ranch to do this.
All right. That might be hard.
We'll
I'll find out.
Yeah, don't worry about it right now, but we'll try to do it here. But.
Well, we could go to time reception. You're welcome.
Bring the tents and sleep in the backyard.
I'm sorry.
What? No, that's fine. I mean, it's up here to time. Yeah, that would be a good time. Go to Mesquite.
It'd be like
we can go to Mesquite.
A trip to Mesquite.
Again, you got to get this thing. I can't emphasize it enough. But we must get to the point where the memories that pictured you not as you wanted to be or think of yourself, but who you are or who you were. Because otherwise, you will not believe how much you've been deceived, especially when you talk to others that were witnesses of the same event.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to have Barbara type up these things that we talked about tonight. And we'll have them typed for next, for Thursday. Now, what this will all show and what it still shows is that we haven't really been aware of being anything more or less than just our human selves that do stuff. that heard certain certain traits, certain habits, certain activities, you've believed it was just you that has done all this. You can't understand that up until the point when you abandon yourself, that you're simply a slave or a vessel for a deity, the wrong deity. And those things are the expressions of that deity. And the abandonment of yourself is the expression of Christ. You were created to contain a life other than your own. You don't have a life. You've always been either a vessel for Satan or a vessel for Christ. There's no exceptions to that. And the act of faith is simply saying, Father, I give myself to you, and knowing at a gut level that that's all that is necessary for every desire of your heart to be fulfilled. And that all of these things that have molded you and control you still can just lose their control over you because you've brought them into captivity to the obedience of Christ, even the past thoughts. And it's an incredible thing to know that you have nothing left to do except relax. You don't have to try to get anything right. You can just be. The vine and the branch. Christ said, I am the vine and you are the branches. That's the greatest analogy or greatest parable of what we have left to do. All a vine does is hang around on the branch. And things happen to that vine without its knowledge because it's in the control of the branch. Or vice versa. Anyway. We have no need to stay up, muddled up in a sense of failing or fear or inadequacy or anxiety or desire or lust. We just live. As he is in this world, so are we. And his promise is, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And you'll find something that almost all of these memories that have this kind of a epinephrine experience, they're all connected with either being in pleasure connected or in pain and humiliation separated, or the perceived separation. And that's why all the way back to there we have to see that, and we will see, he will never leave us nor forsake us. And that we've always been joined and can never be separated. And that every one of us was with each individual through all of those experiences. That's why it's so neat that Angela's here, is because, you know, I've been with Angela at every one of her experiences, probably, for the most part. Or at least around. And, I mean, that's mind-blowing to me. And that's why probably she can be more of help to us than in many ways than we know. The moment you think you have to, you know, you have that feeling of, I've got to do something, I've got to. That means that you believe that God is leaving you to your own devices. Well, he doesn't. He can't. He never will. We come to see that the problems are not the problems, but the subtle slipping back to seeing ourselves as independent selves, who shouldn't have those pulls of independence. So we condemn ourselves for that. Well, why don't you recognize that you're supposed to have those pulls of independence? Count them the highest joy. Not because of how they make us feel, but because of who we are. And then we can count everything as the highest joy. As a truth, all we have to do from now on is to wake up. We're going to wake up and we're going to remember some of these past things that have been going on in our lives. And we're going to see them that they had no more power or no less power than a dream.
It's so funny because that's what they seem like anyway. It's just a dream.
Well, I promise you something. I have experienced this on at least two major occasions. That when we die, when we are joined truly and this body has lost its function, that all of life will seem like that moment where you just woke up from a dream and it'll be gone that fast. And all we'll know is this incredible sense of joy and warmth and enveloping, all kinds of soft, fluffy clouds all over the place, a feeling of that. I mean, it's an incredible feeling. If you haven't experienced it, I promise you, you will. We are not left to our own devices. He will never leave us nor forsake us. Amen? Okay, all this then is just the process of waking up. Anybody have anything else? Everybody see the value of doing this?
Yeah.
Now remember, we're not doing it so that you can go back and psychoanalyze it. We're doing it so you can go back and simply see that he was there with you and we were there with you. That's all. We're not going to Ann Lander it. Take it large person.